doesn't bother me, though. I learned in this business, you have to have a thick skin. I open the next email, noting it was sent just 4 days ago, and my hand freezes over my laptop at the subject line. There's just one word. Logan. I then see the email is from his sister, Tabby Burke. I obviously didn't get to meet Tabby, but I sure knew about her. Logan told me all kinds of stories about his entire family, and one of my regrets from all of this was that I didn't get to meet them. Still, I hesitate to read the email because I suspect it might not be nice. But then curiosity gets the better of me, and I give in to it. Dear Valentine, I'm sorry we didn't get to meet a few weeks ago. Things just got really crazy in a really bad way. They say hindsight is 20/20, and right now I'm really regretting having told Logan about your blog. I should have waited until you came to Seattle with him so I could meet you. I should have given you the benefit of the doubt and judged you for myself. For that, I'm really sorry because I'm the one who showed Logan and, well, as you know, he was extremely pissed off. In case you're wondering, he's not mad anymore. And if you're still inclined to read on, I want you to know, well, he's not anything anymore. He's not my funny brother who texts me throughout the day. He hasn't called in to check on our parents since his visit, and he won't answer his phone. He will, however, respond to my emails, and they're short, terse, and frankly, asshole-ish. I'm afraid my brother is taking this really hard. I know you think that might not be your problem, but I kind of hope you will think it is. I personally believe Logan is acting this way because his heart is broken that you're not there. I'm going out on a limb and guessing yours is the same way. I believe this can all be fixed. I really hope you get this email. I obviously did some research on you and found out you shut your blog down. That tells me a lot about you. I really want my brother to be happy. I think you're the one to do it, but we have to get his head out of his ass first. Want to help me? If so, give me a call. My number is below. Sincerely, Tabby Burke. I stare blankly at the laptop for just a moment, then I read Tabby's email again. Then I read it one more time. Then I call Jeremy, and I read it to him. His advice? Hurry the fuck up and call Tabby. I wait for my dinner to arrive, then hurry up and wolf it down. I pace around my apartment, letting the food digest and working up the courage to call Logan's sister. She seems so positive, but I'm afraid to have hope. Finally, I sit down at my kitchen island, take a deep breath, and dial the number she gave me. She answers on the second ring. Hi, Tabby. It's Valentine. So, what's the plan? She laughs into the phone, and it's a delightful sound. I am so glad you called me. Now, here's what I think you should do.
Chapter 24. Logan. I step into the wounded caribou and shake some of the rainwater from my head. I take my jacket off and hang it on a hook by the door. It had started raining a bit ago, and I've always felt carrying an umbrella was a bit of a sissy move for a man. Sadly, I didn't have a hat in my truck, so even though I pulled up the lapels of my jacket to give me a bit of protection against the rain, it left my hair quite wet. I run a hand through it, slicking it back from my forehead. It will dry in short time and fall back forward again. A tiny jab of pain hits me in my gut, as I remember how Valentine would always push my hair back when I was hovering over her. Usually while in bed, while I was fucking her. But sometimes if we were just standing face to face, and I was bending down to kiss her. She'd take her hand and brush that lock of hair back and... Fuck. Stop thinking about her for Christ's sake, Burke. She's been gone for 3 fucking weeks. It's time to move on. The restaurant seems crowded, which is odd because rain normally keeps people indoors. I see Sarah in a booth having dinner with Leslie. April and Jorgen in a different booth, holding hands across the table and laughing. Most of the tables are full, and there's only a few bar stools left. There's one on the end and three in the middle. I choose the one on the end so I can eat in peace. Ted meets me with a beer before I can even sit down and gives me one of his sad looks. He's been watching me closely the last few weeks like I might do something crazy. "Know what you want to eat?" he asks softly. "Just a burger," I tell him. "Fries on the side." "Got it, buddy," he says, and the overtly soft affection on the word buddy grates on my damn nerves. "Will you just fucking cut it out?" I snap at Ted. He blinks at me in surprise, but doesn't respond. "I'm fine. She was just a girl. It's over. Can everyone stop walking on eggshells around me, okay?" Ted grimaces, but nods his head. His voice is apologetic. "Yeah, sure, Logan. You're good. I'm good." "I'm good," I reassure him, and then give him a smile that is so fucking forced my jaw hurts. "And hungry. So hurry up on that burger." Ted leaves to put the order in, but doesn't come back to chat with me like he normally would. I think I may have hurt his feelings, but so fucking what? Got my own issues to deal with. So I huddle over my beer and try to process where everything went wrong for me. At first, when I started trying to analyze this shit with Valentine, I placed the blame right on her shoulders. The minute she wrote that first article after coming to East Merritt, that's when things went wrong. Of course, Tabby told me I was full of shit when I floated that theory by her, but what the fuck does she know? She wasn't the subject of those blogs, nor was she betrayed. But sometimes, like now at the end of a long day when I'm lonely and I know my bed is cold, I think about it some more. Perhaps there was something else that I missed that could have averted all of this. I search my brain, consider every angle, map out options. I come up with fucking nothing, other than what is meant to be will be. I'm halfway through my beer when Ted slides the burger before me. He's gone before I can say thanks. I pick up a fry, nibble on it, and look down the bar. Most of the stools are filled with my friends and residents that I protect. I used to come in here and be deep in discussion with any of these guys, but now we hardly talk. Probably because I've been a bit of a closed-off asshole. At least that's what Ted suggested to me, and Sarah also confirmed that when I snapped at her one day. I pick up my burger, open my mouth, and prepare to take a bite when I hear a woman, April, I think, exclaim in an excited sort of shriek, "Valley!" Then several people are calling out, "Hey, it's Val," or "Look who dragged herself back into town." Then I hear Sarah say, "Get your butt over here, honey, and give me a hug." I set the burger down and twist on my stool. And fuck me 10 different ways. Valentine French is standing inside the wounded caribou. I totally disregard the sudden and overwhelming feeling of elation that courses through me, stuffing it down deep as I watch her make the rounds. She hugs people, pauses at tables to say a few words. She hugs Jorgen when he comes to stand beside April, and then I watch as she walks up to the middle of the bar and plops down on an empty stool. Ted is there in a nanosecond, leaning across the bar to kiss her cheek. She hasn't looked down the bar at me once. And God, she looks perfect. Utterly fucking perfect. She's not wearing her designer clothes, and her face is free of makeup. In fact, she's got on a pair of faded jeans, hiking boots, and a thick gray sweater. I assume she must have ditched a rain jacket at the door. Her hair is pulled back into a high ponytail, and she looks absolutely fucking edible. My burger goes ignored, my fries get cold, and my beer goes flat. I watch Valentine down the bar, and she doesn't look at me once. A few guys come up to talk to her, some I can tell in a flirty way. Monty Plume pushes his way in beside her stool and leans an elbow on the bar. Now why the fuck would he be talking with her? She wasn't kind to him in her blog. I watch as he says something to her with a smarmy grin, and she laughs while shaking her head no. He shrugs with a good-natured smile and ambles off. April comes up to sit beside her, and they bend their heads close together to talk. Ted stays on the other side of the bar, and they include him in the conversation. Valentine does most of the talking, her hands animated. Ted nods along with serious eyes, but April seems really excited by what she's hearing. And I have no idea what in the fuck is going on. Then, to my surprise, Valentine stands from the stool. She blows a kiss at Ted, gives April a hard hug, and walks over to the booth where Sarah is. Sarah reaches into her pocket and hands Valentine a set of keys, so I'm guessing that's where she'll be staying. I'm also guessing Sarah knew she was coming back to town and didn't say a fucking word to me about it. Again, without even looking down the bar at me, Valentine makes her way through the restaurant, waving goodbyes, handing out a few hugs. She grabs a brown jacket from a hook right next to mine, and also an umbrella leaning up against the wall. And then she opens the door, and she's gone. I watch the closed door for all of 2 seconds before I'm scrambling off my stool and running out the door after her. When I hit the concrete sidewalk, I vaguely note it's still raining, but it's tapered off to more of just a mist. I immediately look in the direction of Sarah's place, and sure enough, Valentine's walking that way. "Hey," I call out, not able to even say her name. She freezes in place and then turns around to look at me. She doesn't seem surprised to see me there, but she doesn't look happy either. Doesn't look sad or pissed. In fact, she looks at me with a polite smile, her head tilted to the side. "Hi." Just, "Hi." How nice. "What are you doing here?" I ask impolitely, feeling like my entire insides are vibrating with some weird urgency. Valentine's gaze sweeps back and forth along Main Street, and then she looks back to me with a shrug. "Guess I just missed this place." "Missed this place?" I ask in disbelief. "Yeah," she says with a bright smile. "It grew on me, and so I decided to come back and try to make a go of it here." A mix of emotions slam around inside of me. Incredible, giddy happiness Valentine is here and going to stay, to extreme anger that she dare come back to this place to rub my nose in her duplicity, to absolute confusion over what any of this means. My feelings are so fucking discombobulated, I can't help but attack. "Let me guess, going to start dating all the men around here again and write about it?" Valentine just looks at me, almost with sympathy, a knowledge that I'm fucked up in the head over her, and she feels bad about it. But she just shakes her head and says, "Nope, that's not what I'm going to do." Then she turns away from me and walks off toward Sarah's. I fight the urge to go after her. Not any of my business, really, why she's here.
Chapter 25. Valentine. "This property is stunning," April says as we walk around the exterior of the house. "Well, the house needs a lot of work, but that's part of the fun of it, right?" I tell her as I admire my new home. It sits just about 2 miles south of East Merritt and is nestled back in the woods. The prior owners didn't take the best care of it, and it was built over 25 years ago, so it needs some updating. But the bones of it are perfect. It sits in an L shape with the porch right in the crook of the L. It's a single story, except right in the middle. From the foyer, a spiral staircase leads to the circular loft master bedroom with an ensuite bath, although it's quite small, and a tiny dry sauna. My favorite part, though, is the gorgeous wood-burning stove tucked into the corner in the living room. We walk into the backyard and climb the 4 steps to the back deck. The woods around my house are thick, but they make the back deck private and secure feeling. Not going to lie and tell you I'm not afraid of bears, because I am, but at least I don't have to worry about Sassy. She's a city dog, and I left her in the loving care of Jeremy and Aubrey, who I will admit dotes on her more than I did. I guess I can grudgingly say I've come to like Aubrey, particularly since it was mostly her pain-in-the-ass visits that got me up and out of bed. Boy, when you decide to do something, you go all out, April says as she follows me onto the deck, referring to the fact I've up and moved to Alaska, purchasing property, all with the hopes of getting Logan back. We both settle into a double-seater swing screwed into the deck overhang with thick bolts. Well, my gesture had to be grand, right? Have you two talked? She asks. I shake my head. The only problem in my grand plan is that he's not giving me the time of day. Or at least the time I need to have some meaningful discussion with him. I still think he's a little sore, I murmur as I let my gaze sweep the thick forest that creeps right up to the back of my little house. Last night, I heard something big walking around, which April told me was probably a moose. Which is why one of the first things I did when I moved here was insist she teach me how to handle a shotgun. I've got two in my house now. One mounted above my bed, and the other in my foyer coat closet. I've been back in East Merritt for little more than a week, although I just moved into this house 2 days ago. I still have a ton of unpacking to do, but I've been working on it when I can get the chance, because since I've moved here, I've been really, really busy. You see, I started up a new blog. Valentine's couch is dead, and I still have moments of tremendous shame when I think of it, but last week I opened up Valentine's Back Deck. And I will be chronicling how a big city girl becomes an Alaskan wilderness woman. I've got all kinds of awesome stuff set up. I'm going to learn how to fish, which also includes tying my own flies, cleaning said fish, and even smoke curing them. Of course, that's going to come after I build my own curing house on my property. That's right. I'm going to build it myself. As I have found that there isn't anything you can't learn on YouTube. I'm going to learn how to hunt and clean my own game, and I'm going to get into hiking. This came only after April assured me there was bear spray I could use as a deterrent and that she'd teach me how to use a GPS unit. Tomorrow, she and Jorgen are taking me camping, and that will be an awesome blog article. In addition to the upgrades I'm going to make on my house, all by myself, I've got plenty of stuff to blog about for years to come, I'm sure. I'm certain this type of blog will be a relief to my parents, focusing on home improvements and gutting fish versus how to give the perfect blowjob. I don't know for sure, since they really didn't care that I left New York City to move to Alaska, but that's okay by me. I moved toward what I hope is my new family. In fact, one of the first things I'm going to blog about is how I've learned to drive. Not all that well, to be honest, and getting my driver's license, which is really why April is here today. You ready to go? I ask her as I push up off the swing. Ready as I'll ever be, she says as she follows me. But honestly, you should just drive yourself there. What's the worst that could happen? I laugh as I trot down the steps of the deck. Let's see. I show up to take my driver's test while driving a car without a license. Logan would probably arrest me. April gives an evil laugh. I don't think that could be a bad thing. April pulls up and parallel parks outside the police station, right behind Logan's truck. She jumps out, tosses me the keys, and says she'll meet me at the Wounded Caribou after. I take a deep breath. Tell myself I can do this. Face Logan and pass my driver's test and pull open the door. I immediately see him sitting inside his office on the other side of the lobby. His head rises. He looks at me shrewdly for a moment, and then he stands up from his desk. He rounds it and comes out into the lobby to face me.
If you've come to apologize to me for what you wrote, I really don't need to hear it,
he says. And it's not in an unkind way, but it's still off-putting. Actually, I believe I've already apologized, I say simply. He blinks at me.
You have?
Yes, Logan, I say softly. That day you found out about the blog and confronted me, I gave you a genuine, heartfelt apology that was from the bottom of my soul. Clearly, you don't remember it, which I totally understand. Emotions were high. So let me assure you again, I am very sorry for what I did.
Well, okay then,
he stammers.
What can I do for you?
I want to take my driver's test, I tell him with a nervous smile. I think I'm ready. No, I know I'm ready. I can do this. If I thought he'd give me a reassuring smile or words of encouragement, I was wrong. Instead, he just nods toward the reception desk in the middle of the lobby that's always been empty every time I've walked in here.
Sit there, and I'll get the written test for you.
Then we have to do the driving test, right? I ask, just to make conversation as I sit where he indicated.
Yep,
he says over his shoulder while he walks back into his office. I watch as he pulls open a lateral file drawer, fishes inside a folder, and pulls out a document. My stomach flip-flops with nerves. I really need my license so I can maneuver around this area, particularly since my home is outside of the town. He walks back into the lobby and lays the test down in front of me, along with a pen.
Just holler when you're done.
Okay, I say as I pick up the pen and look at the first question. I ignore Logan as he walks back to his office. My concentration needed fully on this test. Logan buckles up, and I do the same. My palms are sweaty as I turn the ignition over on the silver Chevy Tahoe I bought last week from some guy in Ketchikan. It's about 10 years old, but Jorgen looked it over for me and said it was in great shape. I know I could have bought something new, but everyone here drives old trucks, and I want to fit in.
This yours?
Logan asks as I put my left turn signal on and check the side mirror for traffic. Yeah, I mutter as I start to ease onto Main Street.
You didn't check your blind spot,
he points out, and I slam on the brakes, halfway out of the parallel space with my heart hammering. Jesus, you scared me, I say as I look at him with round eyes.
Check your mirror and over your shoulder before you merge,
he says politely, and thankfully does not put down any type of mark on the clipboard on his lap. Got it. I manage to do as he says and merge safely onto Main Street. Where do you want me to go?
I don't care,
he says offhandedly.
Just drive around and show me what you can do.
I head south out of town toward my house, not because I'm going to show it to him, but because I'm curious if he knows I bought it. We're silent as we drive along, and I keep the speed at 5 miles below the limit. I'm not only nervous this is my driving test, but I'm extremely uncomfortable being in such tight confines with Logan, who is as big, beautiful, and alluring as ever. With the exception that he hates me.
Who taught you to drive?
Logan asks, and I don't dare to turn my head to look at him. I can't tell if he's just trying to make polite conversation or avoid awkward silence, but I keep my eyes on the road. April, a few times. Monty took me out once, I tell him.
He didn't seem too bent out of shape about what you wrote about him in your blog,
Logan says, with a bit of derision in his voice. He accepted my apology, I say, simply. I actually wrote a lot of apology notes when I got back to New York to those I'd wronged. And even those I didn't actually blog about, I let them know I was sorry if I embarrassed their town. Logan doesn't say anything, and when I risk a slight look to my right, I see him just staring out the passenger window. I turn to look back at the road and wonder how far he wants me to drive.
Heard you bought the old Willard place,
Logan says. And it's a well-timed comment, as the house is about a half a mile up the road. I did, I say, pleased he's actually initiated conversation. Want to see it?
Nah,
he says, as if it's the last thing in the world he'd want to do.
I've seen it before when Tim and Molly lived there. Nice place, though.
I have a lot to fix up, I say, cheerfully, because I really can't wait to get started on some things. I even bought a sewing machine and was going to learn how to use the damn thing to make my own curtains. My friends back in New York would shit if they could see me now.
A lot of guys around town could use extra work, Logan says, flatly. You won't have any problem getting stuff fixed up.
I plan on doing it all myself, I tell him confidently. Logan's head snaps my way, and I risk a quick look. He's astonished by my proclamation that I'm doing the work myself, but all he says is,
Let's head back into town. You can use your driveway to turn around.
Okay, I say, and manage a fluid turn into my driveway, as well as an excellent execution of backing out again to return to town. The ride back is silent, and I'm okay with that. I am here in East Merritt trying to make a new life. That is very true. But I can make a new life anywhere. I'm here because Logan is, and I'm bound and determined to win his heart back. He's a stubborn ass, though, and I expect his pride is what's holding things up. Tabby suggested as much, because Logan's taken a lot of shit from his friends about the articles, particularly about his impressively sized package and ability to hand out orgasms. Tabby seems to think that if he lets me back in, his manly reputation will take a hit. I didn't understand this, but she explained, Val, you wrote shit that embarrassed him. He took a lot of flack for it. The best way he can prove his studliness to his buds is by cutting you out. He doesn't want to look pussy-whipped, and if he lets you just get away with that crap, that's exactly what his friends will think. So, was how I responded. I just didn't get the big deal. It's just the way it is with Logan, she explained. His ego is sturdy, but it's not impenetrable. No man's is. So, what do I have to do? Kiss his ass or something? No way, she told me with a laugh. Trust me, that boy wants you. Just put yourself in his path and he'll eventually get off his ass and come after you. And how do you know he wants me? I had asked her breathlessly and was embarrassed by how important that answer was. Tabby's voice was affectionate to me, and this said something, since we'd only been friends for a few weeks and we'd only ever talked and texted. She told me, Because he talks about you with me. He's angry he lost you. Granted, he's angry at you, but he knew what you two had was special, despite him acting like what you did cheapened it. He'll come around. Trust me. And so that was the big game plan. For me to be visible and hope he gives into attraction and feelings for me. For him to remember what we had was real and wasn't made less real just because I did something really stupid. I've told him I'm sorry. I can only hope he really accepts it, because that's the only way he'll let me back in.
Chapter 26. Logan. I look at my watch and see it's getting late. I should head home. I'm starving, and I'm pretty sure I have some leftover spaghetti in my fridge. I'll admit, this is a pathetic move on my part because it's Saturday night, and I'd normally head over to the Wounded Caribou for a few beers. Granted, I'm on duty, but the most that would happen is a fight, and those are few and far between in this small town. But I don't consider going because I'm pretty positive Valentine will be there, and I've been trying like hell to avoid her. Of course, that's been practically impossible in this little town, and if I didn't know any better, I'd say she was putting herself directly in my path so I'd notice her. Because, fuck, she could be 3 blocks down on Main Street talking to someone with her back turned to me, and I'd still notice her. It's like I've got a heightened Valentine radar going or something. Then there are the times where we're in closer proximity, and there's no escaping her. The other day I went into Jebby's for breakfast. It's nowhere as good a restaurant as the Wounded Caribou, but they do have a decent stack of pancakes. Plus, I didn't think Valentine would ever be in there, since the wounded caribou is where she hangs out now with all of her new East Merritt peeps. But fuck if I didn't walk in and she was in there with April, having breakfast. And fuck if she didn't see me, give me a wave and a loud, "Hey, Logan," and then proceed to call me out in front of everyone. "Why don't you come eat with April and me?" I swear the cosmic universe was conspiring against me or something. My first instinct was to run right back out the door, but then that would be around town in about 15 minutes, so I did what any big macho dude would do. I stalked right up to her and slid into the booth next to April, telling both ladies, "Good morning." To Valentine's credit, she kept the conversation light. She entertained me with stories about the fishing lessons Jorgen was giving her, and her home improvement project to pull up the linoleum in her kitchen and replace it with tile. Then she stunned me when she told me she was blogging about it. And that's when I learned that Valentine had taken her talent for writing and her love of blogging and turned it into a witty, charming narrative of a city girl gone rustic. After breakfast, I went back to the station and pulled up her blog, and read all about her getting her driver's license for the first time. She didn't mention me or the driving test. She focused on April and Monty helping her learn, which sort of burned me just a bit. Technically, I gave her her first lesson in my driveway. At any rate, it seemed that wherever I went in town, there was Valentine. I'd run into her at the drugstore, and once I passed her Tahoe on the side of the road with a flat tire. She was standing at the rear of the vehicle with the tailgate down, hunched over and reading the instructions on how to put on the spare. As a cop, it was my duty to stop and help her. She refused, though, determined to learn how to do it herself. So I stood back and gave her some pointers, and I did have to help her with one really cranky lug nut that needed more elbow grease than she had. But fuck if she didn't change it all herself. She was so fucking proud of herself, she gave a loud whooping cheer and held her hand up for me to high-five her. Couldn't fucking help myself. I did, and laughed when I did it. Fuck. I want her back, bad. I want everything about her, her laugh and her humor, the way she pushes my hair back from my face, the way she makes others just seem to glow in her presence. I want to help her tile her floor and hike with her in the woods, and I don't know how to go about doing it. I've managed to be in this same town with her for almost 2 weeks now, and I've not even acknowledged her apology with actual truthfulness. Never even bothered to tell her I forgave her. Or that I realized that when I broke things off, I was operating off of some extreme emotion. Or that I missed her and was probably foolish in letting her go, and more foolish in not trying to get her back sooner. I have no excuse for my inaction. There's only been one other woman in my life that I was serious about, and I was able to leave her back on the East Coast without a backward glance. But not Valentine. I can't sleep or eat right, I'm an asshole to most people, and I'm obsessing on how to make this right. She's apologized to me. She's come back to town and done nothing but be friendly and engaging. If I want her back, it's all on me now, and I'm not sure how to go about eating crow. I've not really had it before, and I bet it tastes awful. The station door opens and I see Ted walking in, a worried look on his face. "I've been trying to call you for 10 minutes, he says irritably. I jerk in surprise and pull out my cell phone. Fuck if there aren't 5 missed calls from Ted on it. Christ, I need to get a new phone. This fucking thing doesn't ring half the time. "Yeah, you need to jump on that," he snaps. "No sense in having a police chief if you can't reach him when he's needed." "Ever heard of fucking 911? I snap back at him. "Or Jesus, Ted, call the landline. It's not rocket science." Ted at least has the grace to look sheepish for just a moment, then admits, "Well, it wasn't necessarily a criminal emergency, but it is sort of an emergency and it could prove to be criminal at some point." This causes me to bolt from my desk. "What the hell are you talking about?" Ted ducks his head briefly before looking back up at me. He scratches at the back of his neck and says, "I wasn't sure if I should even come tell you or not, but it's Valentine. What about her?" I clip out. "Well, she's been at the bar for a few hours, had dinner, and then, well, you know how it is. All the guys started buying her drinks. They're damn stalking around her like lions for the kill." "Is she okay?" I ask as I start to come around my desk. "Well," Ted says hesitantly, She's, well, she's really drunk. And there's some guys trying to egg her on to dance on the tabletops again. And you didn't think to shut that shit down? I ask as I march past Ted to the front door of the station. I tried, he says as he follows me. I even tried to talk her out of it. I told her, Valley, don't do this. You know if Logan heard about it, he would not like it. And what did she say to that? I ask as I wait for Ted to exit behind me so I can lock the door. Well, it's probably not important. Ted, I bark at him, what did Valentine say? She said you didn't care about her or what she did, so she was just going to live life to its fullest, and she couldn't do that wondering if you'd ever get your head out of your ass, he admits. She said that? I ask incredulously. Yep. And where is she now? I ask. Last I saw as I was coming over here, she was crawling up on top of one of the tables. I think ZZ Top was on the jukebox, and she seemed to like that song. Fuck, I growl and then take off running toward the wounded caribou. I hear Ted's boots hitting the sidewalk behind me. When I jerk the door open, I don't hear ZZ Top, but rather Def Leppard's Pour Some Sugar on Me. I groan internally, not even wanting to know how Valentine would dance to that song, nor would I want to know how many hard-ons that will produce for the male patrons. I step inside and my gaze lands straight on her. She's dancing on the center table, sexy as anything I've ever seen in a pair of tight faded jeans, knee-high boots, and a low-cut black blouse. Her arms flow upward as her hips gyrate, catching the glorious red hair, so she raises it up briefly before she lets it cascade around her again. The place is packed with men, and they are swarming the table, catcalling, whistling, and egging her on. Some of the men look like they want to pull her off that table and do very bad things to her. Or maybe that's my imagination, not sure. I know all these guys and they're basically harmless, but come on. That's Valentine French up there. The most beautiful, sexy woman ever to grace East Merritt. In all my years in law enforcement, I've never hesitated. I've always been decisive and quick to act. But as I watch Valentine dance, and the guys look up at her in adoration or lust or whatever the fuck they're feeling, I just don't know what to do. Until I get a sharp push between my shoulder blades and I stumble forward 2 feet. I turn around and glare at Ted behind me. He nods at Valentine. Will you just go and get your fucking girl? I'm tired of watching you mope around about it. My eyes go back to Valentine, and I'm surprised to find her watching me as she dances. She rotates her hips, smooths her hands up her ribcage, and looks at me with absolute desire in her eyes. For me, and only me. Decision made. I wade through the crowd, not necessarily shoving guys out of the way, but having no problem clearing my path to the table that Valentine's dancing on. And the entire time I walk her way, she never takes her eyes off me. When I reach the table, she angles her body toward me, and from that moment forward, she's dancing just for me. I can't help it. I fucking smile at her, but because I don't want anyone else looking at her anymore, I crook my finger at her, telling her by that action and the look on my face that she needs to get her ass to the edge of the table so I can help her step down and we can leave together. She ignores my request and continues to dance. Still, only for me, but now her eyes are challenging. Does she fucking want me to get up there with her? Because that will never happen. Or does she want me to make a statement? Because that I can do. Without another thought, I lean across the table, catch her around her legs, and haul her over my shoulder. I can hear her giggle over the music and several of the guys laughing. Valentine places her palms on my lower back for leverage. And goddamn, it feels good just having that simple touch. I swing her around, the guys moving out of the way, and march her back toward the door, where Ted stands staring smugly at me. He opens the door, and as I pass him, I ask, You plan all this out? Might have had a part, he says with a grin. It was his idea, Valentine says, and I notice her voice is clear and strong. No way she's drunk, the way Ted told me she was. Both of them lying, conniving, amazing, wonderful people who worked a magic plan to get me off my ass. Owe you one, I mutter as I walk past him. We'll name our firstborn after you, Valentine calls to him as we hit the sidewalk, just before the door closes and we're alone outside. I lower her to the ground, and when she's stable, she smiles at me. Are you still mad at me? For writing those blog pieces? I ask. She nods. No, I tell her truthfully. But you're mad, she guesses. You were just shaking your ass for all of East Merritt to see, I tell her sternly. And I'm pretty sure there's an ordinance against that. She cocks an eyebrow at me playfully and holds her hands out, wrists touching each other. Her voice is a sexy taunt. I think you should probably arrest me then, Chief. My hands go to my cuffs and I pull them free of my belt. Who am I to deny a lady's request?
Chapter 27. Valentine. My orgasm ignites, runs a short fuse, and then explodes so brightly my entire body bucks off the bed. Logan groans his approval of my reaction, but doesn't move his face from between my legs. Stop, I say in a trembling voice as my entire body quakes. He pauses, lifts his eyes to me in question. Enough, I tell him. That was 3 times he made me come with his mouth while my wrists are cuffed to the rails of his mission-style headboard. Not enough, he says with a grin, and I can see he's got that gleam in his eye where he's being competitive with himself. He wants to prove I chose the right man, beat his chest like he's king of the jungle and all that. His head tips down. Logan, wait. I say softly, and he pauses again as he looks up to me. I sort of thought this would be the other way around.
What do you mean?
He asks as he scoots up a few inches and rests his chin on my lower belly. I thought I'd be the one giving you blowjob after blowjob to make up for things, I tell him.
Valentine,
he says softly, and just the way he says my name causes a shiver to run up my spine. It's said with such tenderness that I want to weep.
There's nothing to make up for. Later, if you want, you can suck my cock for hours, days even. But for tonight, let me do this. I've dreamed about this so much, and I have so much lost time to make up for.
Another shiver up my spine, and my toes curl slightly. I'd really... really love for you to be inside me right now, I whisper. I need you inside me, Logan. His eyes go thoroughly warm, still filled with desire, but also with something I've never really seen there before. I can't put my finger on it, but I like it, and I'm mesmerized by it as he crawls up my body. He reaches a hand out to the table and snags the cuff key, quickly unlocking me from the bed. I immediately wrap my arms around his neck while he settles in between my legs. His erection lies hot, thick and heavy against me, and my hips flex just a tiny bit to rub against him. He huffs in frustration as he circles his hips. I open my legs wider, and the head of his cock comes right up against my opening. It's a perfect match, and with a tiny push of his hips, he slides in just a fraction. The look in his eyes becomes warmer, and he lowers his face just to press his lips softly to mine. When he lifts up, that look in his eyes becomes warmer yet, and he pushes his hips, sliding all the way in. We both moan, and I watch his eyes flutter closed only for a brief moment, and then open again to look at me with... that look again. It's so beautiful, and I almost feel unworthy to have it directed at me. I wish I knew what it was.
I love you, Valentine,
Logan says, and suddenly everything about this moment punches home. That look in his eyes, the words from his mouth, and the fullness of him lodged deep inside of me.
I'm sorry it took this long to tell you that.
Oh, God, I say as my nose stings and I blink my eyes furiously so I don't cry. Oh, God, I love you too.
I know, he says softly and without any smugness. You told me before. Now it's my turn.
I go ahead and let the tears build. It's without a doubt the most special moment of my life. I'm in love, and it's being returned to me. This was an emotion I never thought I'd feel. Never thought it was an emotion that was important enough to feel. I berate myself slightly, because look at what I could have been missing. But then I realize, no. I could only have this feeling with Logan. And my life was nothing but preparation for this, perhaps very singular moment right now.
I'm glad you came back, he murmurs as he rests his forehead against mine and squeezes his arms in slightly at my ribs.
He doesn't move otherwise, just lies on me, within me. I don't give up on what I want, I tell him, one hand coming to stroke the hair at the back of his head. Never have.
I need to get you to Seattle to meet my family, he says gruffly. Think I fucked up that last visit.
Chuckling, I shake my head, which dislodges his forehead from mine. He looks down at me with serious eyes. You had good reason. Besides, Tabby and I are like best friends now. Logan pulls his head back, eyebrows knit in confusion.
Tabby?
Yeah. She reached out to me, sort of encouraged me to go after you.
Why, that little...
Absolutely wonderful, charming, and romantic sister of yours? I finished that statement for him. And if it wasn't for her, you wouldn't be inside of me right now.
Feels kind of good, doesn't it?
He asks with a grin. Would feel better if you move, I suggest. And so he does. And it's wonderful. And I missed it so much that I vow to myself right then and there that I'll never leave his side again. I know that might be a bit of a long shot, but I never think clearly when Logan's fucking me. Love you, baby, I whisper as he rocks in and out of me.
Love you too, my Valentine, he murmurs back. And welcome home to Alaska.
I sigh in contentment. It's good to be home. Epilogue. Valentine. Christmas weddings are the best, aren't they? I ask as I look out at the expanse of sparkling white before me and sharp blue skies above.
You're just saying that since I agreed to marry you in St. Lucia,
Logan mutters as he leans back in his beach chair. I do the same and dig my feet down into the pristine white sand as I close my eyes. We decided to elope to a tropical destination for our wedding with the intent to throw a big shindig when we got back to Alaska, most likely next summer. I never wanted that big white wedding, and Logan knew there was nothing virginal about me. And Logan wanted something low stress and really only about the two of us. In my opinion, it was perfect. Before we finalized this plan, however, we did check in with his family, who are absolutely the best people ever. We wanted to make sure they were okay with us eloping, and because they're the type of people that just want us to be happy, they were all for it. Plus, they liked the idea of a party in Alaska better. My parents were a little peeved they couldn't do a big society wedding in New York, but I wasn't about to have the happiest day of my life played out in that scenario. And once they got over their snit about it, they did send Logan and me a beautiful 8-piece china setting. We both snorted over that because what in the hell do we need china for in Alaska? When I tilt my face up to the sun, I feel Logan take my left hand, his fingers absently twisting my wedding band back and forth. A small smile plays across my face, because he's been doing that for the last 4 days since I've said I do. He does it because he's having a hard time believing it to be true. that I said yes. After all, he asked me to marry him only 5 weeks after we reconciled. Both of us knew the request was impetuous and a huge risk. After all, I'd just moved to the wilds of Alaska and was yet to even experience a harsh winter. Although, truth be told, this area of Alaska really doesn't get that much colder than New York in the winter. However, in New York, I had a car service to take me where I wanted. In Alaska, I'd have to get out and drive around in that snow on curvy mountain roads. Regardless, Logan is a man of confidence, and in his words, we fit so well together in all ways that there was no reason to wait. He did mention something about him being 37, and perhaps he felt our biological clock was ticking, and he did keep harping on the fact about that night long ago when he carried me out of the wounded caribou over his shoulder, and I made a passing remark to Ted that we'd name our firstborn after him. Seems this stuck with Logan, and before he asked me to marry him, we'd spend long nights in bed holding each other and talking about the future. That included kids, of course, and I learned he wanted 3. I hadn't thought about it at all since I never saw myself getting married. He let that subject lay low for a while. The marriage proposal caught me off guard because, as I said, it happened pretty quickly. But it was simple, private, and in only the way that Logan can do. He had me on the couch, on his lap, and there was a nice fire going. We were both sipping wine and talking. And then he just pulled out a black velvet box from his pocket and gave me an impassioned speech about love, destiny, and fate. As he started to open the box, I risked a glance at his face, and for the first time since I'd known him, I saw he was nervous. Before he even got the box open, and with my heart hammering harder than it ever has before, I blurted out, "The answer's yes, so you can stop worrying." Logan's eyes came to mine, his lips tipped up.
"You might not say that after you see the size of the ring."
My eyes dropped down, my heart still hammering over the magnitude of what I just agreed to, and when I saw the ring sitting there, my heart just broke wide open with love for him. It was simple, elegant, a gold band with a small diamond solitaire. I loved it at first glance because it was exactly what I would have wanted from Logan. "Answer still yes," I murmured as I plucked the ring from the box. He, in turn, took the ring out of my hand and slid it on the appropriate finger on my left hand. Then, he dragged me off to bed, and we went at it for so long and hard that night, I swear I was walking funny the next day. We also had a tentative plan for a Christmas wedding because we'd made our plans between all the sex that night. Logan continues to twirl my ring around, and I lazily roll my head to the side to look at him. His face is tilted up to the sun, eyes closed. "What are you thinking?" I ask, and his fingers stop moving on my ring. He sits up, releases my hand, and turns in his chair to face me. I twist slightly to face him.
"I noticed your birth control pills have been gone from our medicine cabinet for a few weeks now," he says,
and I blink at him in surprise. Never in a million years would I have thought he'd notice that. When Logan proposed to me, and after I said a very hasty but definite yes, he wanted to talk about kids. I think this was about after the third time we'd had sex to celebrate the engagement. He told me he didn't want to wait. I told him I had to think about it. And I did, for about 2 days, and I realized I didn't want to wait either. Neither of us were getting any younger, so I threw my pills out and didn't look back. I also didn't say a word to Logan, because if and when I got pregnant, I thought it would be fun to surprise him.
"Are you..."
he starts to ask. I shake my head. "It's only been a few months, and I went to see a gynecologist, and she told me it can take some time."
"Makes sense,"
he says as he stands from the chair. Reaching down, he lifts me up and sweeps me off my feet. His skin is warm and oily against mine, and I have to admit I'm dreading going back home in 3 days, only because I'm going to miss him strutting around in nothing but swim trunks and hard abs since we got here. "Where are we going, Mr. Burke?" I ask as I hook my arms around his neck and nuzzle into him.
"To the room, Mrs. Burke," he says, picking up the pace. "Why the fuck we're still lying out here on the beach when we could be inside fucking and getting pregnant is beyond me."
I giggle into his neck and then pull back to look at him. "We should try tequila." He stops dead in his tracks.
"Tequila?"
"Yeah. Supposedly, if you get drunk on tequila, you get pregnant," I say with a shrug. "Or so I've heard."
"Well, right now, let's do some sober fucking,"
he says as he continues past the pool and into the resort.
"I can go a few times this afternoon. Then, after dinner tonight, we'll try tequila."
I laugh at my husband as he carries me all the way up to our room before walking us into the large shower to get us rinsed off before we hit the bed. Truth be told, we've spent a lot of time in this room, and I'm fine with spending more. I'm also not going to be joining in on the tequila tonight. As of today, I'm technically 2 days late on my period, but I don't want to tell him that and get his hopes up for nothing. Sometimes I'm late. But once we get back to Alaska, if it still hasn't started, I'll get a pregnancy test. And then maybe the last of all our wishes will come true. This has been Sex in the Sticks, a Love Hurts novel, written by Sawyer Bennett, narrated by Maxine Mitchell and Joe Arden. Copyright 2017 by Sawyer Bennett. Production copyright 2017 by Sawyer Bennett.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.